Mr. Sternberg, the court appreciates your willingness to accept the Criminal Justice Act appointment.
It's my pleasure, Your Honor. Thank you.
You may proceed when you're ready.
I'm Jonathan Sternberg. May it please the court. I'm Jonathan Sternberg, and I represent the appellant, John Lozano. As Your Honors know, Mr. Lozano is serving an enhanced federal sentence based on a Missouri marijuana conviction that the Constitution of Missouri has since declared, quote, vacated as legally invalid, and a Missouri court has vacated accordingly. The district court, however, denied 2255 relief, holding first that Mr. Lozano's motion that he filed within a year of that vacator was second or successive under 2255H, and second, even if it was timely, the Missouri vacator doesn't matter under federal sentencing law. Your Honors, both holdings were error as a matter of law, and the court should reverse. And I'll start with successiveness and then move to the merits in the brief time I have. First, Mr. Lozano's claim is not second or successive. To the contrary, it was timely under 2255F4, which Congress, I think, wrote for this very purpose. His claim arises from the fact of the state court vacator entered years after his earlier 2255 motions. That vacator is the factual predicate for the claim, making this a new fact case, not a new law case. The Supreme Court decided this in the Johnson case in 2005. Where it held that vacator of a prisoner's prior sentence was a matter of fact that starts the one-year period under 2255F4. And this court applied the same rule to a second petition. Johnson was about a first petition. In the DeRue case in 2013, explaining that until the new expungement, the claim, quote, had not yet arisen, and the motion, therefore, wasn't successive. And as we point out on pages 22 and 23 of our opening brief, every other circuit to have entertained this question has agreed with that. Now, the government argues that the Jones case from the Supreme Court in 2023 and the Rivers case from this year changed all of that. Well, it didn't. Neither case did. Jones involved a new statutory interpretation that wasn't about a constitutional issue, raised through 2255E, not a later arising fact. The court didn't discuss 2255F4 at all, let alone overrule Johnson and the other decisions we rely on principally. The Panetti case and the Magwood case, both of which are also from the U.S. Supreme Court, and also allowed new fact claims as not being successive, although those were under 2254 rather than 2255. Rivers, which is the other decision the government cites now for the first time on appeal because it's a case from just this year, doesn't address the situation either. It involved a 2254 petition and discussed, quote, in general, whether a second petition is successive after entry of judgment is a timing issue, not whether a later arising factual predicate creates a new claim. Now, the government's reading, if the court were to accept it, would effectively erase 2255F4 from the statute. It would mean, contrary to all these authorities that we're citing, that once a prisoner files a 2255, no matter what happens later, no new fact ever could be allowed unless it were second or successive, fitting 2255H. No court, Your Honors, has ever held that, and Congress didn't enact a meaningless provision. Here, the 2023 Missouri vacator didn't exist when Mr. Lozano filed his earlier 2255 motion, which was, you know, a standard timely one about ineffective assistance of counsel and that kind of thing. His 2255 motion filed within a year of that vacator wasn't second or successive.
And so, and no one has, the government has not contested the timeliness if, in fact, it's not a successive?
No,
I
don't believe the government has. I asked as an alternative in our brief if the court disagreed with that, they could remand for an evidentiary hearing, which
on diligence.
On diligence, exactly. But the only evidence in the record was a certified judgment from a Missouri state court dated August of 2023, and my client's obviously filing his new 2255 within a year of that. So I don't think that's an issue, no, Your Honor.
Okay,
moving on.
So, that's exactly what I was going to suggest.
Yes.
Moving on to the merits.
Sure. So the district court's. Go ahead, Your Honor.
Tell me why, because you don't have a lot of time.
I know.
The expungement question isn't simply a matter of interpreting the guidelines and therefore barred by Sunbear.
Sure. So this isn't a question of guidelines interpretation. No one is disputing what the meaning of the guidelines is.
Well, it doesn't it turn on how the guidelines interpret the term expungement?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so. So the guidelines are pretty clear. It's 4A1.2, comment 6. It excludes convictions that are vacated due to legal errors or exoneration or are ruled constitutionally invalid. Here, we plainly have something that has been ruled. I mean, usually it's a court doing the ruling of what's constitutionally valid or not. Here it's the people of the state of Missouri in their own constitution that specifically say that this is constitutionally invalid.
Aren't they really looking at you know, if you look at what we said in Townsend in 2005, we said we look at is there evidence of actual innocence or is there an error of law or unconstitutionality in the conviction? And there was no unconstitutionality in this conviction. And, you know, the amendment to the Constitution isn't an exercise in time travel. It doesn't go back and then create, like, an unconstitutionality where none previously existed. It just says that under our Constitution, we're not going to count any of these things, and as a matter of justice, we're going to go ahead and vacate them. Now, that sounds a lot more, looks a lot more like, to me, a matter of grace or commutation or pardon, as opposed to a declaration that the conviction was originally unlawful.
With respect, Your Honor, I disagree.
Okay, I figured you would.
So the Constitution of Missouri here, I like your time travel example. I appreciate it's unusual what the people of Missouri did here. I tried to find other examples from some other time in American history, and I couldn't. Mm-hmm. The closest I could find was when President Roosevelt pardoned people after the 21st Amendment, but that's a pardon. That's different. But here, I disagree. I think this is effectively, it's a time travel. It's saying that ab initio, today, in the year 2025, if you have a 2002 marijuana conviction like my client did, the Constitution of Missouri declares that conviction legally invalid. I think the people of the state of Missouri and the drafters of this constitutional amendment knew what they were doing when they inserted that specific language in there, shall be vacated as legally invalid. This is mandatory. It's not discretionary. Expungements is a matter of grace or pardons from a governor, things like that. Those are discretionary. The governor doesn't have to do it. The state court doesn't have to pardon.
What about when there's a, to that point, if someone, say, I think I can't remember which case it was, but the someone completes their probationary term, had a diversionary judgment, and then they completed it successfully. Isn't that a shall? Aren't those some of those state laws, don't they require then the conviction to be expunged?
So two responses to that. Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. However, going back to the language of the actual sentencing guideline here, it's vacated due to legal errors or exoneration. That's not a legal error or exoneration, or ruled constitutionally invalid. That's not ruled constitutionally invalid. This, I agree, is not a legal error or exoneration, but Missouri law now declares these convictions invalid completely for any purposes. And it's because what the Constitution of Missouri did, and again, I'm not sure about the wisdom of this necessarily, but that's not up to us. That's not up to the federal courts. It's up to the people of Missouri. What the Constitution of Missouri did is it effectively created a right of adult Missourians to marijuana, to possess.
So is it the equivalent of saying that was never a crime?
Effectively, yes, Your Honor.
Have they said that? Because that does seem to be one step further. One to say, well, we used to have this. Now we're not going to allow any agency or administration or any private actor to rely on it as a conviction. It would be another to say, and you know what, that was never a thing. That was something that never should have been.
The way I read the expansive language of the Missouri Constitutional Amendment, that's exactly what it does.
Has Missouri spoken on it? Have the Missouri courts said anything like that?
No, they haven't, and unfortunately, but part of what this constitutional amendment did is it directed courts to, without a petition, my client, in fact, didn't have to petition for this expungement. It directed all the courts to simply go through their records and erase all of these convictions and make them all legally invalid. Seeing that I'm running into my rebuttal time, I'll see Your Honor's thing.
Very well. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Mr. Davids.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Justin Davids. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney for the Western District of Missouri, and I represent the appellee, the United States of America. Good morning. The question here today is what motions qualify as second or successive under 2255? And Rivers v. Guerrero answers that question. We know that it answers that question because it recognizes right up front that it's a term of art. And then it start, then to answer what that term of art, how it's defined, it analyzes the statute, the text of the statute, 2244B.
Let me ask you, was the second or successive habeas in Rivers, did it newly become ripe like this situation?
Did it newly become ripe?
So the
situation in Rivers was there was the defendant filed a 2255. He filed a state habeas petition in Texas, convicted of multiple crimes, including possession of child pornography. The district court denied that claim, and he appealed for a certificate of appealability to the Fifth Circuit. And at the Fifth Circuit, they granted the certificate of appealability, but before they had decided anything, the defendant obtained the investigative file from his original criminal case and found some documents that he had never seen before that were potentially exculpatory. So he attempted to get the Fifth Circuit to allow him to supplement the record. They denied that. And then he eventually filed, while on appeal to the Fifth Circuit, he filed another federal habeas petition in the district court based on those exculpatory records. And the Supreme Court said that second one that he filed while his first one was on appeal was second or successive.
Okay.
Right.
But that wasn't new information. It's a little bit different, though, right? I mean, here we've got I'll use the word expungement for the purpose of this question.
Right.
The expungement of a prior conviction, that's a new fact.
Mm-hmm.
That was just he didn't know about information that was presumably already there. So it's a little bit different just as a setup.
I don't think it is. It's unclear from the opinion whether it was simply unknown or whether it was newly discovered.
Well, but there's even a third thing. Here it is, unknowable.
It is unknowable.
Yeah, so unknowable is different than merely unknown,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
I mean, if there's nothing anyone could have ever done. This claim could never have arisen, would never have been ripe, unless some action had been taken by the people of Missouri.
Agreed. But the reason in Rivers that we don't have that analysis about how new this claim is because it didn't matter to the court's analysis. The court's analysis based on 2244, its textual analysis, led them to conclude that, and it specifically states that the second or successive moniker applies to claims that have been presented in subsequently filed applications. And then Rivers defines an application as a filing that seeks adjudication of one of those claims on the merits. And Rivers explains that even if the subsequent petition presents a new claim, the second in time application can only proceed if it falls within one of the two narrow categories of 2255H. And that's all based on the textual analysis. The problem with decisions like DeRue or N. Ray Jones from the Sixth Circuit is they aren't based in a textual analysis that the Supreme Court has now adopted in Rivers and in Jones. DeRue is based on Singleton, a decision from this case, which was a pre-Panetti case. But they're both dealing with the same issues, which are Ford claims and competency claims involving state execution.
But DeRue also relied on Johnson, the 2005 Johnson, said something like, this case is almost exactly like Johnson.
But Johnson wasn't about second or successive.
No, but it was about what is a new claim.
It goes to what triggers F4, but F4 is a statute of limitations provision, right? And Jones makes that clear. whereas H is jurisdictional. Like, we have to decide H here, or we have to decide whether H applies or not here, because the court has to resolve jurisdiction, right? Once that's been decided, then if the district court would say this is not second or successive, then it has to consider, is it timely under subsection F, right? But
so the second or successive is jurisdictional?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. So either this is second or successive and the motion has to be dismissed, or it's not second or successive, then we go to the question of F, right? And Jones makes this clear, like, that it's a statute of limitations for F. So the idea that the argument that precluding this as second or successive under H invalidates F4 isn't the appropriate analysis in this case. F1, or H1, goes to a new fact relating to actual innocence, right? So you can bring a second or successive motion once it's been certified by the Court of Appeals if it's a new fact that relates to someone's actual innocence. Well, obviously, that's not this case here. This is just a sentencing claim. H2 goes to a new constitutional right made retroactive by the Supreme Court.
Well, their argument is at least in part that it is, in fact, a new fact that the people of Missouri enacted a constitutional amendment which invalidated all these convictions. And if that is, in fact, a fact that is newly established, well, it flows naturally that no reasonable fact finder would have found him guilty if they'd have been aware of that fact, right? So then, doesn't that fit into H1?
No, this is not about guilt. This is about the career offender guideline and whether he's a career offender. He'll still be guilty of his crimes, right? So this is why Sun Bear comes into play, is because even if this weren't second or successive, Sun Bear precludes a defendant from challenging his guidelines calculations, right? And so here the defendant would argue that this is a constitutional claim because the Missouri Constitution has been, well, this is not the type of constitutional claim we're involved with when it comes to the sentencing enhancement.
When would it become perhaps a due process violation? So I think typically we think of the constitutional claim differently, or like if it's above the stat max, something mm-hmm. like that. Or got a statutory minimum that wouldn't have applied. But here, if I understand correctly, the guidelines were pretty much doubled. Is that kind of the party's
that's
appreciation?
About it.
And so at what point does even Sun Bear allow sort of a safety valve kind of situation for something that has such an impact on the guideline, the typical guideline
right.
calculation, the two-level enhancement here or there, maybe would fall into the Sun Bear as you've described it. But wouldn't there be a time when it might kick into what you might call due process, might call miscarriage of justice?
Right. I think what Sun Bear, and Sun Bear was a case that involved, again, the career offender guideline, right? In Sun Bear, the defendant was also trying to.
But I don't think it was this big of a difference. And I'll stand corrected if you remember it differently. But I thought that the effect of any success on the petition would not have had the kind of impact it would
right.
here.
And I don't know about that specific. I do know it was about career offender. I also know that, first of all, the court based its decision and essentially said there can be no miscarriage of justice in a career offender or in a guideline situation because it's not a constitutional issue, right? And so Sun Bear, and this court has cited it subsequently, says that it cannot be a miscarriage of justice. To hold that the situation like this would be a miscarriage of justice, I think, would be against prior Eighth Circuit precedent. I also think in this case, the guideline itself at question, while it says that an expunged conviction wouldn't count outright, it can be counted. The court can still take that into consideration as an underrepresented criminal history. So even with his expunged conviction, the court could still say, yeah, but at the time you committed this crime, you knew that it was illegal and you still did it, and they could still sentence him within and take that into consideration under the guidelines.
Mr. David.
And not just 35.
Time is expiring.
So with that, we'd ask that you affirm the decision of the court. Thank you.
Thank you.
In the brief time I have, there are two things I'd like to address. One is, first, Sun Bear. Sun Bear is specifically about when there's an ordinary question of guideline interpretation. In the Dixon case, which we also cite, this court held that when you have a predicate conviction that has been legally exonerated or is constitutionally invalid, there was one that was for a due process violation by the Jackson County prosecutor in Kansas City, and the state court had invalidated it for that reason. This court specifically held that 2255 relief lies, and the court granted it. So that's not a question, an ordinary question of guidelines interpretation. That's the continued reliance on a predicate conviction that the guidelines themselves expressly forbid counting. The other thing I want to impress on the court is what my opposing counsel just said about Rivers doesn't appear anywhere in Rivers. Rivers doesn't use the word ripe once. It doesn't address Panetti at all. And the point to Panetti, which is also, again, these are 2254 cases, but they're about this timeliness issue. The point to Panetti is that an unripe claim isn't second or successive to begin with. I agree the court has to determine first is something second or successive, but the Supreme Court has given a specific definition to what that is, and an unripe claim, an unknowable claim, Judge Erickson, I like that, wouldn't qualify ever. We ask the court to reverse.
Thank you,
Your Honors.
The court appreciates both counsel's appearance and argument today. The case is submitted, and we will issue an opinion in due course. You may be excused.